Back in January, we spent the month of January talking about the upside-down world. And so I described that a little bit, and I hope that you were able to grab a couple of those. You're welcome to go online to our Facebook page or back into our podcast if you want to listen to those, just as I talked about living in the upside-down world. And what I was talking about in that series is that oftentimes God uses disappointment in our lives to get a hold of our attention. Now, none of us like disappointment. Any of you like to be disappointed? How many of you hate disappointment? You know, nobody likes it. You know, it's like, you know, a kid opening a present on Christmas morning and it's a pair of socks. You know, nobody likes disappointment. But God uses this disappointment in our lives to grab a hold of our attention and to refocus us on His right side up kingdom. When we are immersed in the upside down world, we do not comprehend just how much upside down the world has molded us and shaped us into something that God never designed us to be. Do you understand that God never intended for men to abuse women? That wasn't His design. God never intended that we would have to have a Me Too movement to bring light to some of those abuses that are happening. God never intended for the abuse of power, for the rich to get richer and the poor to get poorer. God never intended the world to have poverty. God never intended to kill thousands and thousands of unborn babies in the name of reproductive rights or choice. God never intended that spouses would step out on their husbands or their wives. God never intended for divorce to happen. This was not God's plan in the right side up world. It's not how He designed this thing to be. But when Adam and Eve were in the garden, the devil came in and deceived Adam and Eve. And in so doing, the devil turned everything upside down to the point, the Bible tells us this, to the point that what is right is now considered wrong, and what is wrong is now considered right. It's upside down. And this is not how God wanted things to be. And what God begins doing in our lives when we come to Jesus Christ is He begins to turn us in this upside down world right side up. And oftentimes He has to use disappointment to do it because we get lulled to sleep. We just get comfortable where we're at. We just begin to think that the upside down world is normal, that that's just the way things are and that's just the way things should be. And so God oftentimes has to break in some really tough ways to get our attention and to say, this isn't the way it's supposed to be. I have something different for you. And through disappointment, God begins to turn us right side up. God begins to break us down so that He can then begin to remold this lump of clay into something beautiful. He can begin to transform us, is a word that the New Testament uses. He begins to transform us into His image. He'll begin reforming us in the right side up world and with right side up thinking. God is in the business of transformation. I alluded to this verse a few weeks ago. It's Romans chapter 12, verse 2. And I'm going to be going through a bunch of scriptures this morning. So there's the first one. Romans 12, verse 2. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, His good, pleasing, and perfect will. God is reforming us. He's reshaping us. And there's a logical question that can arise here. If God is taking so much effort to reform us, wouldn't it be easier for Him just to take us right to heaven? Wouldn't that be so much simpler? I give my heart to Jesus and boom, I'm out of here and I'm in heaven. And I don't have to deal with this upside down world anymore. Wouldn't that be nice? How many of you, not that you're trying to die, okay? But how many of you think going to heaven would just be so much easier than having to hang out here? And if you don't believe that, just wait till you start getting older. Knees go, eyes go, everything goes. You know, you got to just take me home, Jesus. This week as I was processing that, I was brought back to Jesus' words, Jesus' prayer. Because in John, Jesus gives a prayer, and He actually, in this prayer, tells us why we are still here. I want to read this prayer to you. There, this prayer is packed with things, with lots of stuff. John chapter 17, I'm only going to read a portion of the prayer, but the whole chapter is this prayer. Listen to what Jesus prayed over. So he's praying. Remember, he's talking to God here. Listen to what Jesus prayed to his heavenly Father. I am coming to you now, but I say these things while I'm still in the world. He's talking to God, not to us here. So that they may have the full measure of my joy within them. How many of you have ran into some families and some homes that have no joy? Sadness. My prayer is that they may have joy within them. I have given them your word, and the world has hated them, for they are not of this world any more than I am of this world. What's Jesus say the world thinks of us?
Hates us.
Hate us. Why? We're living right side up in an upside down world, and the world doesn't like that. Catch this next thing. My prayer is not that you take them out of the world, but that you protect them from the evil one. Wait a minute. Jesus is saying, I'm not going to just take you right to heaven. That's what he's praying here. My prayer, God, is not that you take them out of this world. I do pray that you protect them from the evil one. They are not of this world, even as I am not of it. Sanctify them by the truth. Your word is truth. And now here comes the key. As you sent me into the world, I have sent them into the world. For them I sanctify myself, that they too may be truly sanctified. My prayer is not for them alone. I pray also for those who will believe in me through their message, that all of them may be one, Father, just as you are in me and I am in you. May they also be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. Why did Jesus leave us here? Because we're to go into the world. So that the world may be in God, just as Jesus is in God, and so that God may be in Jesus and in us, just as he was in Jesus. I have given them glory that you gave me, that they may be one as we are one. I in them, and you in me. So that they may be brought into complete unity. Then the world will know that you sent me, and I have loved them, even as you have loved me. If you want to write that down, it's John chapter 17, verses 13 to 23, right in the middle of that chapter. There is so much packed into this prayer. Let me just review it real quick. Here's some of the stuff packed in here. First off, Jesus prays that we may have joy. Amen?
Yeah.
Do you have joy? It's easier to have joy when the worship team's singing some great songs, isn't it? Yeah, they're doing up there. Oh, yeah, we can get into that. Next, the world is going to hate us. No surprise, folks. No surprises. If you're upside down or you're right side up and you're living in an upside down world, that just gristles. That doesn't feel very well to people who are still upside down. Next idea, Jesus doesn't want us out of the world, but he does want us protected. So he's not just sending us out to the wolves and saying, good luck. No, he wants us protected. He wants God to bring us protection. We are not of this world. That's another thing he prays, that they're not of this world. We're not of this world. We're still here, but this isn't our home. This isn't the end of it all. We're not of this world. And then Jesus gives us an assumed job. There's a job here. That we will tell the world of Jesus so that Jesus may be in them as he is in us. And the last thing he says, and this is interesting, he leaves us here so that he can also sanctify us, so that he can mold us and be reshaping us and building us into the people that he wants us to be. So Christ doesn't just boom, zap us out. When we come to know him, he leaves us here. He asks for protection. He leaves us here so that we may witness to other people, but he's also still doing the shaping and the molding and the rebuilding of our lives. Is anyone here perfect? Okay, let's mass confess. How many of us here are not perfect? By raising your hand, are you not signifying Jesus has some work to do on you? He has some work to do on all of us. And we're here because he's doing that. He wants us to be his testimony, his witness. He wants us to take his story into the world. But he's also working on us, remolding us and shaping us and changing our hearts. It takes a while to rebuild the upside down to make it right side up. And it takes us a long time to start getting that into our thinking. What does it look like to now live in God's right side up world? So while God has left us here, he has not done so without giving us protection or done so without a purpose. This theme of standing strong runs throughout the entire New Testament. And Paul even uses a bit stronger words when he talks about this same idea. In Ephesians 6, Paul puts it this way: "For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms." And this verse is taken from a very famous passage out of Ephesians chapter 6. It's a lot bigger passage. It has a lot of other things that some of you, I remember talking about that as a kid in Sunday school class. And we're going to talk about this whole passage as we go to Easter. Sorry to break the news, but do you realize we're only about 8 weeks from Easter? But that's good news. Warmer temperatures, flowers coming up, grass turning green, leaves turning green. As we move from here to Easter, I want us to break down this passage and begin walking through what's traditionally called the armor of God. And here's how Paul opens this passage. Finally, "Be strong in the Lord and in his mighty power. Put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms." And I think this is an excellent place to go, an excellent way to follow up the upside down series. As we're working to become right side up, what does this look like? How is God rebuilding us? What is he reshaping us to be? If I trust that God is remolding my life and reshaping me into something, what's it going to look like down here? What's it going to look like after he's done work in my heart and my life? And this passage lays out a lot of that. This is what this looks like. This is where it's going. This is what happens in the life of a believer. Last week, we read a lot of verses that declared what God thinks of you. And if you didn't get the pamphlet, there's still some more left in the little basket back by the back door. 55 things from the Bible that God thinks of you. And a lot of that talked about who you are just as being a human being on this earth. And I hope that marinated in your mind a little bit. God is reshaping you, and he thinks the world of you, but what's he doing just for you? How is he reshaping you? When we begin to realize that the world that we're living in is upside down, it begins to open our eyes to the reality that the world then is by and large being controlled not by God, but being controlled by evil forces, by the devil and his schemes, and by Satan and his demons. And that's why Jesus prays for our protection. Because we're now aliens in a world that we don't belong to anymore. A world that doesn't like us. So he starts there, "Oh God, please protect them from the enemy of this world." And then Paul encourages us to stand strong. Because we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against spiritual forces and wickedness. Let's just have a little bit of fun. Turn to your neighbor and simply say, "You are not my enemy."
She says, "I am."
No matter who you're with this week, no matter who gets up in your bumper and pushes you down the road after they cut you off, they are not your enemy. They're not your enemy. Paul makes it very clear, our enemy is the devil, Satan, his schemes, the powers of wickedness that rule this world. That is our enemy. And now he begins to say, this is how we combat this enemy. And if you don't believe that enemy is real, oh my goodness, maybe we need to step back and just think about that a little bit. In our American culture, I'm afraid we've sort of been lulled to sleep over this spiritual battle. We downplay it, we ignore it, we chalk it off to the fringe type of Christianity that's out there a little bit, that isn't so nicey-nice of Christianity. We play with it, we laugh at it in the movies, we bring those movies into our homes. But we don't take it seriously. And too often, what happens, we talked about this on Wednesday night, too often we get lulled to sleep. Time and time again in scriptures, the Bible tells us that we are in a spiritual battle against sin and Satan, that we are spiritual soldiers for Christ in this battle. And this battle is waging war over your soul and over the souls of everyone around you. It is a real battle that's going on. And I want to give you a little bit of perspective on this, on our Hebrews. On Tuesday night, we're going through the book of Hebrews. We're doing a deep dive on Hebrews and moving real slow through it. And when we got together Tuesday night, the one of the most common verses that everybody thought was fascinating out of Hebrews 2, chapter 2, was the very first verse. We must pay the most careful attention, therefore, to what we have heard so that we do not drift away. And I like the way that that's phrased, and that's a powerful way of phrasing it. You know, oftentimes, we don't just up and make a decision to stop following Christ, to just walk away from the church, to just walk away from God's truths. It doesn't happen like that. We sort of just drift, slowly but surely drift away. And we've all experienced this. As many of you know, about a year and a half ago or so, I had this conviction that I needed to get healthier. And to get healthier meant that I needed to start eating better. And we did really good. We got rid of all the junk in the house and all the salty stuff and sugary stuff, and we threw it all out and we started eating healthy, and I was working on program. I dropped some weight, you know, but through the whole process, I was learning how to cook better. We learned a bunch of new dishes that don't take a lot of salt and a lot of sugar and a lot of processed junk to make it good. So we were learning how to cook better ourselves, and things are going really good. And then I knew we were going to come to Christmas. Yay! This is like, it is a system for failure, folks. You have Halloween candy, and what you don't give away, you have to get rid of. And the easiest way to get rid of leftover Halloween candy, you know, okay? You go from Halloween, you build up to Thanksgiving, and you're going to have, you know, you're just going to load yourself up on Thanksgiving. And then from Thanksgiving, you just go into Christmas. And it's like, oh my goodness, there's no hope, you know, as you go through. So I resigned myself that, you know, it's going to be a rough couple months and I'll try to just be good. But come January, I'm really going to get back into eating healthy and whatnot, you know. So we went to the relatives. We did all the Christmas stuff. And we came home and you know, we were coming home like a day or two after January 1st. So I gave myself a day or two to get back. And wouldn't you know, as soon as we get back, I get a phone call and, hey, Pastor, let's go out to eat. And I want to go here. Okay, and I knew that place was not going to have anything that was good for me, but it was going to be fun. So, okay, and you know what I did? I'll get back to this after that dinner. Right? I go to the dinner, and wouldn't you know, somebody else shows up at the house. Pastor John, I have some leftover Christmas cookies. You know, we didn't get them to you before Christmas. And as a pastor, I can't throw those away, and I can't give them away because that would make you all feel bad, okay? So I bring them into the house, and I'm looking at these thinking, man, Michelle, you should take these to school, but I know you can't because that'd just be bad. Because, well, the cookie's good. I don't know. I gave them away, you know? So they're sitting there. I'm like, you know, I'm just going to wait another day or two and make sure all these cookies get gone, and then, you know, then we'll get to it. You know, we're about 2 weeks into January at this point. And then, you know, about those cookies are all gone. And then I'm thinking, oh man, the golden arches are calling. McDonald's and French fries. We'll start back on it 2 days after that, right? That's going to be my last meal. I sort of played it up. It's the Last Supper, Michelle. It's the Last Supper. McDonald's. And don't we do that? We all do that, right? We have this brainstorm. We have this spiritual moment. We have this revelation in our lives, and I'm going to go at it. And as soon as you go at it, old girlfriend shows up and starts to flirt with you. Things don't go like they should at work, and some idiot does something dumb that you have to pick up the mess for. Husband, wife, or kids push you too far, stress you out, and, well, I'm just going to drink a little to take the edge off. And all those commitments we made, maybe God convict you to, I want to start supporting God's church, taking a tithe. I'm telling you, this one will happen every time. I'm going to make a commitment to tithing to God's kingdom to be a good steward. And sure enough, I'll guarantee it, Sunday afternoon or Monday morning, you're going to get a bill in the mail you didn't expect and you can't afford. Well, I can skip the tithing. We'll just move that back a couple more weeks. I am telling you, folks, the enemy is real. Those aren't coincidences. Those just don't happen. Anytime we make a move to begin living in the right side up world, the enemy is going to direct attack and try to get you to go right back to the upside down. And somehow he convinces us that processed food and salty food and sugary food and all that, somewhere along the line, he's convinced us that that is really good. And it's not. But it's not just in that area. It's in all these areas of our lives. Because this doesn't just happen with eating. It happens everywhere. Let me give you a couple of verses. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8. Peter says, "Be alert and of sober mind. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour." And doesn't that sound like the battle going on in your soul sometimes? A roaring lion. And Paul told Timothy, this young pastor, in 2 Timothy chapter 2, verses 1 through 3, "You then, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus. And the things you have heard me say in the presence of many witnesses, entrust to reliable people who will also be qualified to teach others." That's discipleship, folks. That's discipleship right there. "Join with me in my suffering," Paul continued, "like a good soldier for Jesus Christ. No one serving a soldier gets entangled in civilian affairs, but rather tries to please his commanding officer." As followers of Christ, we are now part of his army, as God is reshaping us into his soldiers. But God's soldiers, as God's soldiers, he has reshaped us into, is not one that carries guns or ammo. It's not one that wears camo or protective vesting. No, we are God's soldiers. And we have been outfitted with God's armor so that we can stand strong. So that we can stand against the schemes that Satan wants to bring us. So that we can go on the offensive rather than the defensive. You know, we're going to play football. We're not going to play. We're going to watch football today. And you all know that you understand the way football works. You have the defense and the offense, right? Which side wins games?
Defense.
Both. Thank you. If it's all defense, will they ever score? No. In football, every sport, you have an offense and a defense. And you know, too often, I think we Christians get this mindset that we're constantly on the defense. And you know, that's not in Scripture. We're not on the defense. We are on the offense. And that's true right here. Jesus is telling us in this prayer, "I pray that you'll protect them." That's God's business, the defense. God protect them. But the reason I want you to protect them is so that they can be on the offense. So they can go take ground. So they can go declare my message. So they can tell people who I am so that I may be in them and they may be in me and they may be unified. That the world may know what I've done. We're on the offensive. And here's the kicker. I want you to get this. We are called to stand strong, not to preserve our souls, but so that we can bring God's unity and we can bring God's truth into the rest of the world. This is the fulfillment of Christ's prayer. "My prayer is not that you take them out of the world, but that you protect them from the evil one. As you sent me into the world, I have sent them into the world. My prayer is not for them alone. I pray also for those who will believe in me through their message." We are now Christ's soldiers, Christ's ambassadors in this world, waging war not against other people, But waging war against the devil and his evil schemes. Folks, we are not being called to be soldiers. We are being called to be soldiers to defend the world against the devil. And that includes even the people who don't know Jesus yet. It includes the haters. It includes the backbiters. It includes the Democrats as well as the Republicans. It includes all of Washington. It includes people that don't care one iota about church. We are soldiers in defense and offense for those people and for us. Our war is not against flesh and blood, but it is against the demons and the devils. It's against Satan and his power. In 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 3, Paul tells the Corinthian church, "For though we live in the world, we do not wage war as the world does. The weapons we fight with are not the weapons of the world. On the contrary, they have divine power to demolish strongholds." What are the weapons that the world uses? Well, they use guns and ammo, and I'm not saying whether that's good or bad because we're in a country church. But the world uses guns and ammo. But you know, the world also uses a whole other thing. They use this thing called fear as well. The world's cooling off. The world's getting too hot. The icebergs are melting. No, we're going to get slammed by an asteroid. We have overcrowding. The left is evil. The right is wrong. You know, everybody in Washington are idiots. You can't trust anyone. All men are pigs. All cops are bad and want to hurt you. The left wants to take away your rights, and the right just wants to strip us of our human rights and dignity. And there's so much of the fear-mongering going on, but that's a tactic of an upside-down world. Fear. The world also uses another thing, power and authority. I am the king, and thus I say. I am the CEO, and you're fired. So the world uses power and authority. The world uses hate. All whites hate blacks, right? That's what the world wants to tell us. All Christians, well, they just hate everybody. All Muslims, they just hate everybody because they're evil unless you're Muslim. The world uses hate as a tactic. The world uses gossip and rumor. Any of you been ever hit and hurt by rumor and gossip? That's the things the world uses. And Paul says, we don't fight like the world fights. We don't use the weapons of the world. Those aren't our tools. And you know what's interesting about all these world tactics? They are all talked about in the Bible, and they are all shown for what they are. It's tools of an upside-down world. They are not the tools of a right-side-up world. It's not God's way of doing things. This is not the way that we've been equipped to fight and to stand strong. We now live in a right-side-up world, and as such, we have been given divine power to demolish the devil's strongholds. In this passage, I keep circling back to Ephesians chapter 6. So that's where we're going to go. We're going to take a look at Ephesians chapter 6. Paul lays out the armor of God, and he lists six key pieces that God has equipped us with so that we can stand strong. So that's where we're going to go over the next couple of weeks. We're going to talk about standing strong, being equipped by God in this upside-down world, trying to live right side up. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to give you the whole sermon outlines. Here we go. You ready? Next Sunday, February 16th. One before that, because we have another Sunday in there. What is it? 9. Okay. On the 9th, next Sunday, we're going to level the playing field. If we're going to wage war, we need to know what the playing field looks like. And so we're going to talk about who is our enemy. And I want to tell you, you may get mad. It is not Trump. It is not Clinton. It isn't anybody in Washington. That isn't our enemy. So we're going to talk about who is the enemy. So next Sunday, we're going to level the playing field, and we're going to look at the battlefield. Okay, February 16th, we're going to talk about the belt of truth. On the 23rd, we're going to talk about the breastplate of righteousness. On March 1st, we're going to talk about the shoes of the gospel. May your feet be fitted with the shoes of the gospel. On the 8th, we're going to talk about the shield of faith. On the 15th, the helmet of salvation. On the 22nd, the sword of the Spirit. And that brings us to Palm Sunday. Paul wraps all of this up on Palm Sunday with sort of the clinch pin of the whole deal, that prayer is where it all starts and ends. And so we're going to talk about prayer on Palm Sunday. Now, one of the cool things that I got coming, I'm going to go see my brother next Saturday. He lives in Michigan. We're going to meet halfway in Toledo. And my brother has a suit of armor. full-size suit of armor. So you can't wear it because it's more of a pretty thing to look at. But I'm going to bring a suit of armor. If any of you have a suit of armor, or you have swords or shields or, you know, whatever, bring them. Just bring them to church. We'll put them on display up here as we're talking about the armor of God. God is bringing us out of the upside down. And he's setting us in a right side up world. As God is transforming us into something new, he has placed into our hands and lives the tools that we need, not only to survive, but to conquer in this upside down world. He's given us the tools for us to stand strong for the right side up world. The upside down world is not going to like us when we stand strong in the right side up. And you're not going to fit so well in the upside down world anymore. So we need to be prepared. We need to be ready to wage war against the forces of a darkness, against evil, so that we can be Christ's lifeline to others who have been trapped in the upside down world and don't even know it. We are God's soldiers fighting for the very souls of others trapped in that world. And Christ's prayer was not that we be removed from the world, but that through us, the world may come to know him and may be able to have freedom in him. I want to ask you just to stand with me. And I want to end with a benediction this morning and send you with a prayer. On your way out, if you have kids in the nursery or kids' life, please don't leave them there. They would sure appreciate to see you again. The prayer that I want to give to you this morning is from Hebrews chapter 2. It's right out of our weekly devotions that we've been working on in our discipleship group. May you pay close attention to what you have heard so that you will not drift away. May you stand strong. May you stand strong. God, may that blessing go with us this week. May your people who are here and hear your voice stand strong as we go into this week. And we will give you all praise and glory and honor. Everything that we do, we are not soldiers unto ourselves. We are working for you as our commander. May all glory go to you as you enable us and help us to stand strong and not drift. Amen.